We'll call the council to order for a special meeting, and we'll have a, let the record reflect that Counselor Don Griner is absent with permission, and Counselor Stu Martinez is absent without, with permission, and...
Don's on vacation, and Ken's headed to Alabama for...
Stu?
Stu's, I mean, headed to Alabama for...
Red Sox, so just let the rest of the council's in place.
Yes.
Like to have a pledge of allegiance, please. Mary?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Is there any discussion on the on these two resolutions that we have before us?
Well, I'll explain.
Okay.
The first one, we're repealing. We approved a resolution about a month ago on the state revenue sharing, and we're going to repeal that. And then we have another one, 09, that is like they used last year, which we like better. So we're repealing the one we passed, and it has to be done by the end of this month, a few days from now, so we can receive that state revenue sharing. And there's reasons for it.
Ricky, I think you just said 09, you meant 08, right?
No, we have a new one here, I believe.
A new one.
Yeah.
Came in the mail today.
09, yeah.
Yeah,
and
it should have it.
Yeah, you should have it.
Yeah,
let's see.
Here we go.
You got it mailed to you, but we just did,
excuse me,
she numbered, it was just numbered wrong. So, instead of 08, it's 09.
Yeah, I have it. Just Terry. Thank you.
So, you take them one at a time,
okay.
We need to...
I'd entertain a motion to approve resolution number 2011-07, a resolution repealing resolution number 2011-04, a resolution declaring municipal services provided by the City of Lapine in order to receive state shared revenues.
I make that motion.
You're a second?
I second.
Any discussion?
No.
Hearing none? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. The chair is aye. We'll go to item four, approval of resolution number 2011-09. A resolution declaring municipal services provided by the City of Lapine in order to receive state shared revenues.
There's
a
correction, that's 08.
That's
on
the approval,
it's
09.
It's just number
09. Oh, yeah. It was with the statute.
Yeah.
So 08 is 9.
No, it's another resolution.
Okay.
It's already used, it's already been approved.
That number is.
Okay.
So this is the one that we repealed.
No, we repealed 07. This was a mistake.
Okay.
08 is 09. I mean, 08 is just the wrong number.
Yeah.
There is no 08's a different resolution.
That's used on a different resolution.
Yeah. 08's.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Jeremy, they didn't know that we already had a resolution, so they just went ahead and gave it.
Okay, sorry.
We'll repeal this one.
Okay.
Entertain a motion to approve resolution number 2011-09 as I read the title.
I make that motion.
Second.
Okay.
Discussion.
And what this does, we have to provide four services, and we have the list of them. What we had passed before gave four specific services, and there was a question on one of those. This allows you to pick between the seven. So that's why. Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it. All opposed? The ayes have it. All right, this time, an entertaining motion to adjourn the special meeting.
I so move.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We'll now enter the work session, and I'll call this work session to order. And let the record reflect that Councilor Stu Martinez and Councilor Don Griner are absent with permission. We've done the Pledge of Allegiance. Are there any added agenda items?
We need to, under number five, we'll add
Ford Foundation.
Mm. Okay. And then under, after that, Greer Maher, the CPA firm who did work on our budget and also is going to talk about some other changes we need to do down the road, some recommendations they have will be here. And that would be next. And we'll take off number seven, the discussion on staffing, because we've added the other items.
Okay. Having made those changes, we'll go to item five, Federal Neighborhood Stabilization Program. Redmond City Manager, David Bryant.
And if you send in your proof, you'd like to come up, it's a work session, you guys can come sit up here.
Your proof is.
Please do. Mm-hmm.
You came from there.
Councilors, thank you for having us. I want to explain this program and why we're here.
Let everyone introduce themselves, so that not everyone knows everyone.
My name is Kelly Fisher. I'm the Homeownership Manager with HousingWorks.
I'm Cindy Cook. I'm the Executive Director for HousingWorks for the Regional Housing Authority that serves Deschutes, Jefferson, and Crick County.
Nice to have you.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
And I hope to we'll get some more things going with the HousingWorks. We talked about some apartments and some other things, and I've worked with Cindy for a long time. And so it's good to have a relationship. And until you were incorporated, that wasn't possible, because you were telling me you don't operate outside of incorporated cities. Right. So you'll see a lot more of Cindy and her staff. And so this is our first kind of project working with these folks. And David in the city of Redmond had called, and we got together, and it was a neat opportunity for Wapine, and I give Redmond credit for really stepping the extra mile and helping put this together. So
that's the recital I did. He's going to talk.
With that, let David.
Okay. When the Stimulus Act was passed in 2008,
first time.
Part of that program, part of the bill included this program. It's a HUD program. It's called the Neighborhood Stabilization Program, and it's designed to mitigate the impact of housing foreclosure on communities and specifically on neighborhoods. And it has a bunch of programs, but in the state of Oregon, they limit the programs to two. We call them Part A and Part B. Part A is down payment and financing assistance, and Part B involves acquisition and rental to very, very low income, below 15 or 50% of median income. The purpose of the program is to absorb all these foreclosures, because what they're doing is they're dragging down the market, they're vacant, they're not maintaining, they're blighting on the neighborhoods. And the theory, and I think it's proven to be correct, is that if you can get people in those houses, again, that are stable, that can, you know, not be foreclosed on in the next, you know, couple of years, the neighborhood will recover and your values will recover, and you'll have a beneficial impact from not being in a blighted community. There have been three rounds of NSP. This last round is especially targeted. There's $5 million allocated to the state of Oregon. There are only three counties in the state that qualify for this funding: Deschutes, Jackson, and Multnomah. And Deschutes, HUD does an elaborate scoring, and really goes neighborhood by neighborhood through census tract level data. Within Deschutes County, the only jurisdictions that have qualifying neighborhoods are the City of Redmond and the City of Lapine. City of Redmond is right at the top in terms of foreclosure impact. Every neighborhood in the city qualifies for this program. Redmond had the highest scores, the number of foreclosed units and at-risk units in the entire state. Lapine was down the list a bit, but had some significant foreclosed units and at-risk units. In the first round, I don't know that we qualified, that anybody in the county qualified. Second round, a lot of the county qualified, and the city of Bend administered the program on behalf of the three counties. In this round, Bend doesn't qualify, and so Bend is probably not going to apply. I don't know how they can apply if they don't qualify. We wanted to step up and grab this money. It's a valuable program, hopefully beneficial to our communities. And so my council has a goal of regional cooperation, and we take that very seriously. I went to them in workshop and in open session and asked them to to agree to partner with the city of Lapine because Lapine has some need and is eligible for a significant portion of this funding. And we wanted to do it formally because, after all, it's your money and you have the right to control it. We are going to contract with Housing Works because they have the capability of administering the program. The council's proposal was to have an IGA with the city of Lapine. We're going to contract directly with Housing Works. We'd recommend you do too. We'll administer the money, so essentially you don't have a lot of staff to do the paperwork. But Lapine will actually direct the program. So we want Lapine to tell Housing Works what neighborhoods they want to focus on, how they want to do the division of the program between Part A and Part B. Do they want to just do the financing assistance, or do they want to have an acquisition program? That's all your business, and we want to give you that. I mean, that's, again, we don't want to micromanage the city of Lapine. We're prepared to deal with financing because it's just processing reimbursements. It's a way of accessing the program. We applied for $3.8 million, and the IGA provides that a minimum of 15% would be spent in Lapine, which kind of roughly matches the number of foreclosures per neighborhood compared to Redmond. And for 15% of 3.8 is about $500,000. So it's quite a robust program. And the challenge would be actually getting that money out, because it's so much money for a small community. But if we're successful, you'll see a pretty significant impact in this community.
Any idea how that would equate to the number of houses?
I will defer to Housing Works, who knows much better than
that. So when we work with the numbers, the amount that we applied for was actually $3.6 million. We figured that between Lapine and Redmond, we had about 80% of the foreclosure. And so HUD did this calculation saying that you have to impact a certain number of housing units within the neighborhood that they identify as eligible. And so they, Oregon Housing and Community Services, developed maps saying that this is the neighborhood that has the highest impact. And so if this neighborhood is where you're going to work, you have to touch this many units of housing in that neighborhood in order to effectively administer the money the way HUD intended. So they don't want to see this kind of scattered, we'll do a little bit here and a little bit here. They want to see that this money is really concentrated in neighborhoods where it really is going to be an impact made in that neighborhood. And so the way we kind of broke down some estimates on how it might work is we figured the money for Activity B or Activity A is a financing mechanism, so it can be down payment assistance for a low-income household buying a bank-owned home. If they can do a maximum 20% of the down payment plus closing costs, plus there could also be an element of rehab in there, which we think would be important, because if we concentrate in a neighborhood and we get people in there but we don't give them any money or they don't have the capacity to then do rehab work once they're in there, is it really going to help that neighborhood, or is it still going to look kind of run down and, have homes that need some rehab work done to it without the home buyers being able to do that? So we figured with the city of Lapine, the median housing price came up to about $82,000 is what the latest Bratton report was saying. So if you do 80% of that, plus about $5,000 in closing costs and about $3,000 or $4,000 in rehab work, we figured it would give about 22 units of housing. And so there's two different neighborhoods, so there could be some discussion around, where do we want to focus, how do you want to break it up. The Activity B is acquisition and rehab, and the state has really asked that we concentrate on providing low-income housing with that amount, and actually they have the requirement that at least 25% of the grant is used for housing households at 50% AMI and below. And so creating homeowners at that level is a little bit challenging. Not that it couldn't be done if there's enough subsidy in the right price home, but I know for Redmond we're looking at doing some maybe a duplex or fourplex and then provide that for low-income housing, rental housing. So that'd be something that...
You're talking about buying one or building one?
Buying one. It has to be bank-owned property that you're buying. That's the whole purpose behind the grant that you're absorbing.
In Lapine, if in these areas that are outlined, we don't have any. We have very few.
Well, that's what we've found. And so So we were figuring that probably it would be Activity A for financing mechanism to provide down payment assistance. And that seems to be the easiest, quickest way to also get the money out. Acquisition and rehab is a little bit more time consuming and definitely takes a lot more work. And if you don't have any properties that qualify to work, then it's not going to work anyway, because it has to be a bank-owned property in these neighborhoods that have been identified.
And the other thing was the small amount of money, half a million, which is a lot, but if you're going to go actually go buy units, you're not going to get many. But with the 20% down, you're basically paying the down payment. You're taking the bank finances. You know, they go in and get their loan. They go to a traditional finance person. They get it. This provides the down payment. And do you take a second?
It's a zero interest second mortgage. It's non-amortized, so it's basically free money for them until they refinance their loan or sell it. So they don't have to make any payments on it. It's not, nothing's calculated in debt ratios, so it reduces them having to have private mortgage insurance. They're coming in at least 80% loan to value. And it helps, just reduces that much more off their monthly payment. So if they find a house for $120,000, they're only having to get maybe a $100,000 loan instead of a $120,000 loan. And so it helps lower the monthly payment, so you can reach that lower AMI household as well.
And is that money also then recaptured?
It is. It is recaptured, and that's one thing I know David had talked about a little bit, is that anything that's used within each city would like to be recaptured and be able to be reused in that city again.
So that money would keep rolling as houses are paid off or someone sells them. So that money, so this would be a program for forever as long.
So as long as
it would be.
It's long term?
Yes. Right. And we do have a requirement that the money has to be spent. I believe, I think it's March 2013, we have to have it all allocated and spent. So, we'll have to
get initial. The revolving, of course.
Right.
And if you say, I guess they just take back what you haven't spent.
Tooth and nail, then I'll figure out a way to get it allocated somehow. But that's where, there'll definitely be some outreach to the community and really try to educate, the realtors and potential home buyers and lenders in this area that this program is.
And that's
helpful.
The key when we met, we started getting realtors to understand the program, because, really this is an opportunity for people to get houses at $500-$600 a month, and own a home. And you go back to some of these subdivisions back here, Huntington Meadows, and those that have really been devastated by, I'm over there, it's half our code enforcement. Mm-hmm. Well, it's because you've got rundown neighborhoods that have been vacant, every other house is vacant, or I should say every other, but a bunch. Mm-hmm. And you need to get homeowners back in there, mowing their yards, and so on. And so I think it's a neat opportunity. Kegel subdivision, I think it was in the map, the other one. Now that's a little more interesting because those are large lots, mm-hmm. And those are more expensive properties and houses because of the size. And so we got to work on the map and where we would do it. But we could have two areas. I think for La Pine, a little different than Redmond, where Redmond has got subdivisions all over. Your subdivision doesn't qualify out where you are.
It might.
Oh,
there's
maps.
So. Yeah.
Do you have a lot of foreclosures in bank owned?
There's more than a large number.
So we'll work on that map, of where.
So we're going to be, we will need to select the area.
Well, they have
based
criteria.
Based upon criteria. Okay.
But the federal government has sort of pre-selected certain neighborhoods, but within that, they want to show an impact in a particular neighborhood. So you can make the decision that, as opposed to spreading this, all throughout the city, we want to focus on one or two subdivisions that are really highly impacted so we can really turn it around.
Well, and what's interesting is that La Pine and Redmond have more number of units than what there's available money to impact. So we will have to fine tune and shrink the neighborhood so that we get
the
number.
You probably can't read those kids.
No.
Yeah. The map she sent me, somewhere we need decent maps there. Because when she shows me the map at the meeting, I'm like, God, I can't tell where this is.
I know, like Honey,
somewhere
we need
to be clear maps.
You can see it goes up to Burgess and then down.
That's why we were all looking at
the
big maps.
That sounds like the Kegel subdivision to me.
Is that something that we could get you guys to, whoever made the map, could we get one that's legible?
You can get on the internet, actually. If you want to, go on the program, private program site, they have this mapping tool that shows all the...
Well, why don't you do that?
We can do that.
Because this has been a problem. But suffice to say, there was a couple, three neighborhoods that qualify.
So then, it's not limited just within the city limits, is that correct?
Some of this is outside of city limits. Right. One neighborhood is primarily encompasses the city and then goes out a little bit, and then the other one's a little kind of, I think it's north, what is it, northeast, I think.
Is that back there, what's that one?
Newberry Estates.
Pinecrest?
What is that, like Day Road, that's more the one acre lot west.
Yeah, 1 acre.
So that had a lot of foreclosures in that neighborhood, and I think that would be the one we'd have to shrink in a little bit.
So but geographically, how big of an area we're talking about when you talk about LaPine?
The neighborhoods are pretty big. I mean, it's not all of LaPine, but it's a substantial amount of LaPine. It is all residents. All residents in this.
Would we not be concentrating within the city limits, or we don't have to.
And that's what I, you know, is when we look at is how many housing units are available in the city limits. I mean, it's a lot of multi-use, and you know, so we want to make sure that we don't limit it so much that there's not going to be people that want to buy, you know, or enough housing units available in there.
Well, we really, you said 22. Probably right. About 22 mm-hmm. or so. Mm-hmm. You're right. That would probably need to.
Try to vote we could get 22 in the city, because you got to get qualified people that are trying to buy.
I'm not sure if any of you guys are aware that the city of LaPine has had a previous relationship with the city of Bend to work with these funds. I mean, they've been in here a couple of years. Now, did you say that you applied for the funds for LaPine? Because my understanding was that Ben had already applied for the city.
I don't know what Ben did. We applied for an allocation, but we applied for the entire county.
Okay.
So the state, they'll have some juggling to do. Depending on, you know, if you want to contract with the city of Ben, you can do that, or you can contract with us. And the state will have to juggle out how they distribute
mm-hmm.
the funds.
My only concern about signing an IGA agreement tonight would
be... We're not going to sign it tonight.
Okay. Would be that so that we can have an opportunity to talk to folks who have, I think, programs ongoing counting on these NSP funds. Last go-around that they put in that Habitat for Humanity, where they got that whole subdivision that was foreclosed on, and they built 3 or 4 homes. Mm-hmm. So we'd need to talk to the Reverend and see if he has plans or if he has started to talk to anybody. And also we got a veterans homeless shelter, and I heard that with this other go-around that there was another one in the works. So I don't know how far along those plans have gone. So I wouldn't want to obligate how we do those funds without talking to those folks who are already involved in these projects.
Yeah, that probably, because if those are in the city of Bend, they wouldn't mm-hmm. qualify for funding under this program.
They're not. The Veterans Homeless Shelter was here in LaPine, as well mm-hmm. as the subdivision.
Okay, so subdivision would qualify for the existing round, and they could qualify for this round as well.
That was like a previous project, but I'm sure he must have something else in the works.
Well, I know that the City of Bend still has NSP2 funding that they were working mm-hmm. on. So Housing Works received $600,000 of NSP1 money, and we bought some bank-owned properties in Redmond and rehabbed them and sold them to homeowners. And then Housing Works also got round 2 NSP funding from Oregon Housing and Community Services, and we did a fourplex acquisition rehab, and it's going to be for permanent supportive housing for homeless population. And then we did a duplex in Redmond that's permanent supportive housing for homeless veterans. So we've had, you know, our foot in with the first two rounds, and I know that the City of Bend, they got round 1 because they were an entitlement jurisdiction, so they automatically mm-hmm. got that money. And then round 2, they applied with a group of folks covering kind of a multi-county area, and Housing Works was involved with that too. And so I know that they had some of those projects going on.
How did that go
here
in that round 2 of Bend? What
they ended up getting $2.6 million. I know that they did some funding for the Bend Habitat for Humanity. They got some money I think they did the same thing, mm-hmm. bought some lots and built, but did the Newberry Habitat get some also? Is that the habitat you're talking about?
I don't know what the name of it is.
Newberry.
Oh, it's Newberry.
But
Habitat.
I'm not
clear on the funding for that, but you're probably right. I'm not clear on the itinerary.
So I don't know if the City of Bend was still doing outreach to utilize the rest of that NSP2 funding, or if they were coming to specifically apply for NSP3.
But did they build new houses?
For the
Habitat?
Yeah. So this wasn't taking existing houses and subdivisions.
No, but it was a bank owned subdivision.
Right. Yes. And they had already had all the locates in there. They had the water and the sewer and everything already to go. But this, all they had to do was build the house. So they had one woman built house, mm-hmm. one youth built house, and what was the third one? Something else.
That's over here.
Yeah.
Off of Metz or.
Yeah.
Right.
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 Yeah. And I think that was for the NSP2 funds, and then the homeless shelter.
Are we talking about the same thing here?
It's the same program. It's just separate rounds of funding, and each round has been targeted a little bit different. NSP1, they had a mapped area saying what census tracts were eligible, and they had this little green outline of this is, if you buy properties in this area, you can do it. And the City of Bend only had two census tracts that were actually eligible in that area for NSP1. And then NSP2 came out, and the areas grew a little bit more because they were getting more data on all these foreclosures coming in.
But we actually, we know that Bend is not going to be eligible for this program. Okay.
Right.
So I guess I don't understand us falling back and looking at what Ben did before is really going to relate to us having a IGA and using funding or a program that really speaks just to Redmond and to Lapine. So I don't understand what that is back there.
Right. Well, to get the funds, that you have to have some certification. So it has to go through some administrative process. So Lapine cannot do it for themselves. So Redmond will be going through housing.
And head it up.
Right.
Okay.
And previously, that the city has a previous relationship with Bend, because they applied for our NSP2 funds.
Okay.
And the city had very little to do with it. But people outside of the community had relationships and worked with Bend and got the subdivision and got the Veterans Homeless Shelter. So what I was saying is that we should reach out to those folks and say, well, this is what we're thinking of doing. We're thinking of changing the administrative policy, changing it over to Housing Works in Redmond. Do you want to work with them, or, you know, to have that conversation before we make a decision tonight? That was my point.
I guess I'm lost on the connection. I don't see, this is a program that is out here that it deals with making money available to people to buy homes, and that's very narrow. Mm-hmm. And it's bank owned houses. What relationship would we have, or what would we be trying to identify by reaching out to those people that were in a different type of a program? I can't make the connection.
Same program, but different phase. Excuse me.
Is it the same program? It doesn't sound like the same program to me.
Well, the SP actually has, I don't know how many tools available within it, and the state of Oregon has limited the tools, at least in this round, to the Part A and Part B. I believe in the second round they have a couple more tools available, and I don't know.
They have land banking. They have activity A is the financing mechanism. B is acquisition and rehab, and then they have where you can do land banking, and then demolition, and what was the fifth one? I forget. There was one more, but they came back and said that really for Central Oregon, they didn't see that there was a lot of that we needed to demolish housing units, that a lot of the housing inventory that was bank owned was fairly newer, and they didn't see the benefit of land banking because it wasn't really soaking up any of that units of housing. And so Oregon Housing and Community Services, they decided when they applied to HUD for this money that they were going to limit it to activity A and B, because they felt that is really how you got the money out on the street the quickest, and it affected the most number of units of housing.
So under this, could you build a veteran shelter?
I don't believe so.
You could do, if you wanted to do Activity B and do the acquisition and rehab and use it to be the 50% AMI and below, then it could qualify under that.
But you couldn't build new.
You couldn't build new, but you could buy an existing unit and rehab it to serve that population.
So yesterday we opened up a fourplex in Bend. We actually acquired a bank-owned fourplex, rehabbed it, and our service provider will bring folks that are homeless, that are in recovery, and will own those units, and it actually is 4 units for folks that are homeless. In Redmond, we purchased a duplex with Activity B funds, and those funds we acquired and we're in the process of rehabbing, and Central Oregon Veterans Central Oregon Veterans Outreach Group will be the service provider for homeless veterans that will be moving into that duplex. So there's opportunities to do acquisition rehab of existing properties. We've done that. It works pretty well.
How many properties are we talking about? If we went that route,
well, you would probably use the majority of the money that would come to Lapine if that's what Lapine decided they wanted to do. If they decided that they didn't want to do the down payment assistance Activity A and they wanted to do Activity B, with $500,000, if you found a property that would work for that could be rehabbed, then that's probably what you would do. And then
that'd be the limit of what we do one
right,
place,
right?
Or two, well,
or maybe two. Maybe, yeah, okay.
Two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
there's already one that's working, right? Isn't it?
There's one for the veterans, but
yeah, and there's more planned.
There's more planned, and there's more that's trying to happen, and we're trying to do some NSP funds to do a homeless shelter and also a transitional housing for families that are. And I was going to work a little bit with another program with COBO to get some NSP funds, but I'm not there yet. It sounds like this would really work, and I do know that there are two duplexes on schedule. I don't know if they're sold or not, but I did look at those, and they're very inexpensive. They're $50,000 or $60,000 for each unit, so there would be 2 units for 120, which would be 4 living facilities. Mm-hmm. But they would definitely need a remodel. Mm-hmm. But this is a really awesome opportunity. Yeah. On the bottom here.
Well, it's,
could you give your name, please?
Carol Swenson.
Keep in mind too that we also administer the federal housing voucher program, and we have a set aside of rental subsidy for veterans. So it's a nice way to marry a bunch of different resources to ensure that there is the supportive services, there's the affordability piece, and that you're taking some of this stock out of bank-owned status and putting it to work. So I think it goes back to the earlier discussion about where you really want to target these resources. We have significant experience in this area. We've got these partnerships in existence now.
So it really wouldn't be up to us. It would be up to, they put the applications, and then it would be up to whoever the deciders are, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And then, at this point, I think we're only talking about administratively, right? Who would we choose to?
Well, the program, some of these other programs that are out there, then the city of Lapine, just like you said, we really had no role when Ben did that. So I guess then the question at some point is if the city isn't going to get into veterans housing, that's not something we do.
Right.
And so, you know, this is an opportunity to go to some neighborhoods and to try to get some, 20 bank-owned houses off the vacancy market, get people in them. And that's really helpful.
I think that magnitude is more advantageous to us by taking 20 houses off of the market around here than because we're going to select one of these two programs. Okay, right. We're going to decide that, okay, we're going to do this or this.
No. Or a combination.
Or we do nothing, I guess, in these groups. Is that, I mean, is that what would happen? Because I don't know who she's talking about back there that's looking at applying for something else.
The Prime Community Action Team is looking at applying for some grants.
So, okay, so here's what I'm understanding, is that these funds have to come to some municipality, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. So that's where the role of the plan comes in. We don't decide who gets the funds or anything. That is only our role is to be the municipality. And these other groups they feel that they do the need. They go to the whoever LaPine has designated as the administrator, because we cannot administer these loans. We cannot administer this program. So whoever, that's the role, is we decide who's the administrator. That's it.
True. Are you saying, Cindy, that this has to come, what you're saying is mm-hmm. that it has to come through, any of these groups would have to come through the city, has to be a municipality?
Yeah, the applicant needs to be a municipality, so to
right.
get funding, you have to both be...
Because no other groups contacted me, other than these people. And I don't know when the deadlines are, but that's why I didn't know all these, if Hellcat's out doing it, no one has come and said, hey, we need you mm-hmm. to help sponsor so that we can get funding for... So I don't know who these people are all working with, but they haven't come here.
It appears to me that this is that what she's talking about, because we all know Covo did the house out here on 6th Street. And when I ran that down through an open house we went to and got that information, and okay, so that is a program that I knew Ben was managing it. And I guess I'm assuming, hopefully safely, that what you're talking about is that program. You're trying to reach some money through that program that is still ongoing in Bend.
That's right.
To do some things that you've got an idea about doing.
Like round two, the money that's out there now?
The money that's out there right now.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So to me, this is a different program.
Mm-hmm.
It has to include Redmond and LaPine. We have to be a municipality. We are. Therefore, we're eligible. And so we're going to do two things. We're going to decide which one of these two programs we're going to do. And the other one is we're going to decide to hire you to manage it. Is that
right?
Okay.
Right.
And we're basically talking about signing an IGA with Redmond to oversee it? Or
well, Redmond's role will be, we'll process the... The vouchers, the paperwork.
Okay.
The idea is that you would contract directly with Housing Works to actually administer,
right.
You know, get them, you know, find the borrowers, do the underwriting, execute the loan. They would send us basically a request for funds. We would sign it. We would give them the whatever down payment was. They close on the loan. They send us a receipt. We send it back to the state, and the state reimburses us.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the big piece, is that it's a reimbursement.
Yeah,
reimbursement.
Because if you take one of these bigger projects that we're hearing about, does that require you upfront that to all of them? And so this is why, I said in the one staff report I sent out this morning was that, you know, this example, you go do a $200,000 duplex, we have to write the check, and then you get it reimbursed. And LaPine is a very small city, and we do not have $500,000. Now, you get it back within a couple, 3 weeks, but I just felt, being this small of a city, Redmond said, see, for them, they're a multi-million-dollar thing. For them to front a couple hundred grand for a couple weeks, and they were willing to do that for us. That is what said to me is, you know, this is where we are in our growth of our city and maturity level. With one 2-day-a-week person and one full-time person here, this was probably the best, safest route to go, and it truly turned some neighborhoods around. There's a lot of needs that are from soup to nuts in housing and veterans and low income and everything else, and this they came, and of course, these guys have an impeccable reputation, and I thought this made the most sense for LaPine in this time at this place. Doesn't mean that something wouldn't change down the road, but I was uncomfortable coming to you and saying we need to upfront $100,000 or $200,000. I'm just not sure that we were ready for that.
We actually did have a presentation during the winter.
Yeah, he did.
He did come in.
Yeah, he talked, but I don't.
Yeah.
I would have to go back and listen to what if he asked us to participate with him on anything. I mean, I just don't remember them.
It was just a presentation on these funds available, and we are applying for these funds for the city of LaPine, knowing that.
And that was SB 3-2. Was it 3?
Because they're not an eligible city, and I understand they were not going to apply.
I haven't heard that they were going to apply. They don't have any neighborhoods. I suppose they could contract with you and apply on your behalf.
Yeah.
Regardless, we haven't heard back. So, made a presentation, and I don't think we've heard anything back. And, the regional, I like what I heard about the goal of regional cooperation, and I think this is a way to exemplify that.
I think it's... Okay. Excuse me. Go ahead.
But, right. So what we need to do is to go to those people who have applied for or might be thinking of programs and saying, we're thinking of changing how this has been done administratively. Are you okay with that?
We're not changing the street. Those are other rounds. They're standalone rounds, and they've contracted. This is
a new
round.
They have previous relationships.
With who?
With applying for the NSP funds. So what am I not saying here that no one's understanding is that...
But we don't have a relationship with them.
You're exactly right.
So why would we be worried
about... But you're in the decision-making position of changing how those loans are administered. Instead of going to what they're always used of, perhaps they've had conversations on what they're going to be using the NSP 3 funds for. And I don't know that.
It doesn't hurt.
The application has been, the deadline's gone. So if they were going to do this, it would have happened. So...
Mm-hmm. Well, I presume they would have, because they can't apply for themselves, they would have...
Like, they would have asked us if we wanted to on our behalf.
I would think.
Yeah.
Because he did come, and I told these guys, and he'd come down and made a presentation a few months ago. I'll call him tomorrow and find out just what's up and where they are. And it could be today they haven't applied and that issue just kind of goes away.
Okay.
And then it sounds like you're working in the 2 fund, so that you weren't talking about the 3 funds. So then that's not an issue.
Yeah.
Okay. So I need to connect with Ben, find out what's up, what they're doing. And we weren't going to vote on this tonight because we're at a work session anyway. But we do need to do it at our next meeting, probably, right?
The application is due Monday, so we filed an application.
Okay.
Because this is as quick as we can get down to you guys.
If
Ben didn't apply, we get funded. I want to do an agreement with you because I want you to participate in the program.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the idea of you being willing to be the financial resource to make it work.
Right. Well, if Ben applied on your behalf, they would do the same thing. I'm not saying that they can't, but I don't know if they did apply or not. If they didn't apply, it's a moot point.
Can I say this? If you talk to him and then we're coming back to this, is that what I am assuming we're going to do? If Ben...
Well, I'll come back 2 weeks with a mobile.
And then we...
We'll sign it and come back either find out that we do have an issue with Ben's done something, find out where they are, or we'll come back and approve our IGA and roll with Redmond. Right. And the housing works.
And Jeremy, appreciate you coming down.
Jeremy's looked at this, and he wants to work with the attorney on a couple things. But basically, what we do is approve it pending those guys get it worked out. But it's pretty simple. Wanted to keep it that way. And it's really it's a trust relationship you have with partners that you work with.
Yeah, and we wanted to formalize it.
I think it's a great opportunity for LaPine to have a partnership like this. To me, it looks like a straightforward program. And when you're talking about, removing some of the, I'll call it stock in bank-owned housing out of the market it's logical, so I like it.
So give me a good maps, and I can get it out to these, and we can kind of be looking at some of the eligible things to see how far out of, because we may have to do some out of town, and you know those neighbors, which areas do we want to do on the outskirts of town, and which ones inside, and balance it right, and if we want to buy a duplex or something in part of the program, and one duplex, if you can buy it for $100,000 or something, and you know, go that route with the rest of it going to down payment.
It may also be helpful, too, at some point for us to come down and just talk about what our housing authority does. And we've got some services that are going on down here, and there's some existing partnerships with other groups. So in setting this aside, it would probably be helpful for us to come down and talk about overall housing programs and what the city is eligible to access and some of the creative work that can be done.
So we can look at it as you're a resource that can involve us in this by bringing you on board?
Yeah, this is the coolest thing, is that, you know, we will engage in the community. So when people want to apply for the loan programs or the down payment assistance, we're going to set up some area right here locally so that people can come local without having to go all the way to Redmond.
Okay.
So we'll establish those relationships with your local lenders and your local realtors so that we've got the ability to have a face where somebody can walk in.
Right.
And in addition to that, when those funds are repaid, they come back to you. They don't go to the city of Redmond. They come back into your fund as opposed to another municipality's fund.
Is that a fund that you would be managing? I mean, the money has to come back and it goes into some account.
Yeah, we talked about that. What would happen is we would have another fund probably, but we would have contracted them, and they would take a management fee or something, you know, to do that. But it would be a fund that...
It has to be reused for NSP eligible activities, so it's not like money that you can go do anything else with.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
It keeps on going. I mean, and you have a housing program. It has, I think, a lot of the restrictions are the specific restrictions are limited or lifted on the revolving. So, as long as you, I think the qualifications for income, but I think you're not required to just renew the same program forever.
There's where then, say down the road, you could work with some groups to build a veterans home or something, because now you've lost those restrictions a little bit, more flexibility. So 5-10 years from now, you could have this $500,000 pot that you truly could go make a big difference in something. So first, we've done that in Jefferson County with CDBG funds, community development block grant funds. We were loaned to a factory that then repaid it back, and then now the county has a several $100,000 revolving loan fund, and they've loaned money in matters to the Ford dealership, all over town, to restaurants. It's because it loses its restrictions, and then you can do it, and it's a neat program. Deschutes County has one of those.
And they actually, Jefferson County loaned some of their revolving loan funds to Housing Works to go in and acquire some blighted units in a neighborhood. And that whole neighborhood it's got new construction going on right now. We knocked down old blighted houses. We built new houses in it. It's wonderful.
And the initial money did
come. And yet we turned around and repaid the money back to Jefferson County with an interest rate.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it was pretty nominal. We negotiated pretty nominal. but that went a long way to the funders, because here was a community that had some resources to put up where many small communities don't have that.
Right.
And competitively, that really gives you an advantage. So I think that's a key thing. But the two things that I think are important is that, people can access us within the community as opposed to having to get up to Redmond. And then secondly, having the ability to recycle that money back to your city and keep it within your city, as opposed to going to Redmond or any other town.
What we can do is, get these realtors are pretty active, and they like to, have a training program and get them all up to speed, and our realtors are pretty good. I think we would get them, looking for things to help make sales, and this helps.
Right.
So I think, provide you guys a place to have that training and get them on board and Yeah. And it's the start of our relationship with the housing authority, which we need.
Very good.
Okay, good. Good discussion.
Thank
you. Great.
Well, it was really nice meeting all of you.
Nice to meet you too.
Same here.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Greg Marr will be here in a little while, so you could start with these folks here, I guess, and that was next.
Thank you.
So at this time, we will move to the Ford Foundation presentation on the event side.
Ford Foundation, look. Yeah.
Move up.
Well,
to the front of the bus.
Thank you very much. All right, front of the bus.
I am Carol Swenson with the Ford Family Foundation Leadership Program, cohort number 2, and this is Sandy Jones. She's also with Ford Leadership cohort number 2.
I'm also part of that.
That's right.
And Mary is part of that. She's on the team also.
And we are here today.
And Gloria.
I'm a doctor of us. Yes. We're here to talk to you today about this sign that I just handed out. In Lapine, communication is very difficult to get everybody aware of what's going on, what's going to be happening. And so we have come up with a class project, part of our class project, that will be an event sign. And this event sign is following the success of a sign in Weed, California, which is much larger than this one. However, it has been a very successful model. And this particular sign would be maintained by the chamber. It would be a community event sign that the signage would all be purchased by each different organization that would be wanting to have their event known about,
displayed,
and they would have to be, it would have to meet certain qualifications, and one specific person would be contracted to make those signs so that they would all be the same and have a good presence. It would be kept up to date and well maintained, and the main reason that we're here is that the county has approved this sign for us. They have given us an exemption as long as the city of Lapine owns the sign. Any questions?
So I guess these are the events on these little placards?
Yes.
So do you just take them off?
Yes.
So what would they be made of?
They're going to be made of wood.
Okay, so then, so for just like a temporary thing?
No, they would have, the sign would have like Frontier Days, or Craft Feed, or Lapine Rodeo, and then the section where the date goes would be a removable, a changeable area.
What I think would help us all is I recently came through Weed, and having talked to Carol about this sign, I even called the mayor and he sent me some pictures of it. So I stopped and took about 20, at least 20 pictures of the sign. I think it would help if I just email these JPEGs to you to let you look at it.
I saw a picture on online, on the internet. I found a picture of it. And it looks really, well, it's pretty large.
Is that that big one by the visitor center?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
In Weed? Yes. Yeah, you go through the gate and, you know, the downtown.
Where are you guys talking about putting this?
You know where the log cabin is in between the chamber and Lapine Realty?
Oh, yeah.
We're going to push the log cabin back farther and get that fixed up so that it has a better presence. And then we're going to put the sign.
Is the log cabin used?
It's going to be.
We use it for storage now, but it's going to be part of our display area.
Okay. How does this be on your sign code?
Who knows? You won't hear when she mentioned it. The county currently exempts signs for community use.
Yeah. Our code probably does.
As long as the city owned it.
Yeah. And these are permanent, or you don't change it. Is it something where you'd like, say, put the if it's an annual event, you just go and kind of re-put a date on it or something?
There'll be removable wooden plaques, and the date will be changeable. Okay. And so the events will move to the top or something.
Whatever's next.
Mm-hmm. And then each organization would be responsible for purchasing their own, and they would just be stored somewhere at the
chamber. It's wood, it's not interior lit, it doesn't have flashing lights, so it's all the things we like.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that is a neat way to help some people wanting banners and other things. It gives them another venue. And you can change dates, that's key.
And it'll be big. You know, people will be able to see it coming and going wherever. And it's not centrally located in Lapine, but it's at a place where plenty of people go. There's gas stations and grocery stores right there, the chamber's right there, a restaurant. So it is a very well-used area.
Is this going to be a flat face with 97 like this? It's going to be flat, and you will only be able to see it?
It'll be double-sided. So as you're going down 97, it'll be
okay.
Both-sided.
Okay, so it's not flat. It's like this.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So will there be a light on there?
We're going to do some kind of solar lighting.
How did you pick that location? Is there a particular reason?
Availability of the owner of the property was easy.
Have you thought about putting it down in the city hall where people would see it as uncluttered in that back parking lot? The other thing is we will own that property forever. The chamber could move someday, and this thing is just stuck out there without a lug.
The proximity to Finley Butte Road was one thing that people liked, because there's a lot of people, neighborhood people that go down that street. And there was some discussion about, asking about that location, and I don't think that's a bad location.
Is it more for locals or tourists?
It's for everybody.
For everybody. There's one, there was a concern that a lot of people don't know where the community park is down on Finley Butte, and that maybe some of this could be used to let people know where that is, because there's ball games and things like that occur down that direction, too. So that's why
you're talking about like putting arrows on it, say park this way or something.
Our project is revitalizing the park area north of the library, and so by being in that kind of a location, mm-hmm. we can kind of Huntington, park this way, park that way, something. We haven't got that totally. We need to get this approved before we.
And who's going to own the sign?
The city would own the sign.
And on whose property are we putting it?
Carol Brewer.
So then we'll have to do a land lease of some type that's going to go on for a number of years.
And she's open to
it. Right, but I mean, I'm just saying, we have to, it will be an agreement. It's kind of like a billboard, basically, of maintenance. You have the right to go on and maintain. Because the reality is, I don't know her particularly well, but people go and come.
Mm-hmm.
We die, we're born.
Yep.
People sell, things happen. And so you need to have a lease that if that sells, it is there. Now that becomes an encumbrance on her property. She wants that. You can't have it to where, unless you're willing to say if she sells it, we take it down. That means the city moves it and puts it somewhere else. I mean, I can tell you the devil will be a little bit in the detail. Doable for sure. But you'll have to have a ground lease liability that she's going to want us to sign, because if someone hits it,
yeah,
all of the above.
I think that the locating it on city property, if it's going to be city owned, ought to bubble to the top and get a very close scrutiny, because I'm going to probably want to challenge some ideas about whether.
With that.
Yeah, is Mary okay with that?
We're on
team.
Well, that was easy.
What do you think?
I don't think it makes a whole lot of difference.
It's a good location.
The maintenance of it and that kind of thing, it probably doesn't make that much difference.
I put a light with somebody, we put a light up on it, it's on our power bill.
I think that the majority of the value of it is for people coming through town, probably more than local, and if it's visible from the highway.
Mm-hmm. Well, it would be kind of neat someday to have the chamber open that building, so.
Yeah, Chamber of Commerce moved to the city building.
Yeah. You know.
Whenever you're ready.
Yeah. I mean, that would be a pretty neat deal.
I think that's, that eliminates a lot of the swirl around getting it.
We can go out toward, out toward that end out there.
Yeah.
And even when I see those, a lot of towns have them.
Yeah.
Sisters and they're always at the ends of towns.
Yeah.
They're not usually in the middle. They tend to be at the ends.
It's easier to see them.
You see, well, there's more clutter again.
They're focused on it. When they're coming in, they see the sign. They're not looking at the buildings on left and right. And it logically presents itself to be a better place.
Yeah.
I vote for that.
That'd be great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have to take it back.
We have a volunteer.
Yeah.
I think the idea of the sign is neat.
Yeah. So what is the big,
Lapine.
Yeah, I'll send that to you and you'll see how they've done it. Actually, it's quite gorgeous. What they've done down here in this bottom part, they've actually used, it's inlaid with
mosaic.
With mosaic, they've got flowers. I mean, they've mosaicked a panorama of flowers coming up this side like this. It's a very nice thing. You look at the front, it's gorgeous. You look at the back, it got some roughness to it. But I'll send you those photos.
Yeah,
ours won't be that elaborate. Ours is going to be rustic and basic. For Lapine, that doesn't mean that another leadership program won't come along and want to embellish it with approval, but ours is to, we need to get something now to get people involved in what's going on here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this summer.
Offersburg, incredible community, and so many people don't know what we have to offer.
You know, the one in Weed is made out of telephone poles. Mm-hmm. And Midstate is sitting down here with a yard with a stack of 24-foot telephone poles. I would think you would want to look at that as a resource. I mean, it's going to save money. I just comment. That's just a comment.
Power poles. They're not telephone poles.
Okay.
Power poles.
Well, we do have some nice logs. Don't we donate some nice logs of big logs?
You know the logs that are on the front of your new building?
That rot in the ground because
these won't be in the ground.
They won't be in the ground. We're going to have still.
That's what that focus is. That was an engineering sketch.
Yeah.
And that's concrete and metal.
Steel.
You know, when we're going to have to put in some parking lot lighting, we can look at that. When they're out there putting in some parking lot lighting, we could run conduit down to when we're doing our remodel.
That'd be killer.
And we could look at that and just, because, I'd make sure they run an extra conduit out there and so that, because one of the things we're discovering, it's pitch black and you can't leave meetings pitch black.
About that.
So we're drawing in, it's going to cost us a few $1,000. I mean, but these are just some things you got to do. And so they're drawing in a couple of light. One's going to be at the end of the parking lot there, and it was going to have a double light on it so it could go into the gravel part and the paved part. And I also told them I wanted plug-ins on each, not that it's a little off subject, but plug-ins so you can light Christmas lights out there.
Oh, yeah.
And even put water so you can have pots with the flowering baskets. If we're going to put these up, let's run the water up them because there's already water out there for the bushes. So, but we could.
So maybe you could even plant big plants.
PVC, if you're in a trench and run a couple PVC lines, one for power and one for it, it's pretty incrementally cheap. You could put couple pots on them and you get your petunias and things and let them flowering down.
Here?
People do notice them.
So you're talking about putting a light on it, right?
Yeah,
that would be awesome.
Yeah. So we'll work with you guys on that and, you know.
So you're gonna build it and then sign it over to the city is the idea.
Well, you would be the stakeholder and the owner.
Mm-hmm.
We have to have it has to be owned by the city or it wouldn't be exempt and we couldn't do the sign.
Right.
So are we initiating the install?
I don't think so because we don't want to have to pay the wages and the crap.
We're doing everything.
You're going to put it up and everything?
We're the owner's putting it up.
Okay.
We're doing everything.
And you'll give us time.
Yes.
And that's what I meant. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for them it's going to be a lot cheaper. We get involved bidding it.
Well,
what did you see?
Ours is all this is just the engineered so that we could bring something to you, and then so that we can actually get started on our project. We have to know how to do it so that we don't get in trouble, it doesn't fall over and hit someone in the head.
We'll go out and help pick the spot with you. Put a stake in the ground and make sure we stay off the right of way.
It's the first thing that we want to do in our project, so it'll be something that will probably get done within the next month or two, would be my guess. Just have to round everything up.
Wow, that's great.
That's a great location. Before the 4th of July.
I like that location.
Would be our hope and dream. So do we need to get something in writing for you?
Well, I can send them a letter that says that the council is supportive of their work with me on location and that stuff, and if you're okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not going to spend any of our money at this point, but when we don't, when we approve our bids and things, we'll just get a contractor to do that as an extra. We'll get a price from it and see.
Well, is there any rollover money to the city based on the fact that they were going to go to a voltaic voltaic cell lighting? You had planned
energy efficient
doing solar lighting.
Solar lighting,
clean
and that money won't be needed now because the city's going to make available plug-in or lighting that would light.
How much are you going to spend on that? Do you know?
The whole project we were planning, almost everything was going to be donated, and somebody was going to be making it or donating it. So we hadn't checked into the price of the solar panel. We just thought maybe about $800 or something was going
to
be better.
That would be a nice contribution to the city.
That's for the whole sign.
That's the whole sign? Yeah, to purchase the metal and everything. We've got some hard workers. You don't know what we've got in our room.
There's a little tongue-in-cheek going on.
Movers and shakers.
Okay.
Well, I remember the first thing your first idea, one of the first meetings was this line.
Dan, you're the real one of the sign.
Thank you very much. You know where we are. You're welcome.
We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
That's a great idea.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
I don't see that. I'm going to go check my cell phone to see in case they got lost or called or something.
I'm going to take five. In recess for 5 minutes. Call the work session back to order out of recess. And it's Greer Marr.
Yes. I'm Chris Marr.
Okay.
Greer Marr.
Just to remind the council, they help with some of our formulas and things and help get where we get lots of funds and different good things, and work with Sandy Freeman from his office. And she does lots of audits and stuff, and so they were great. And remember, we couldn't use our auditor because they have to be neutral on that stuff. And so that was good. And we've completed that piece. But one of the requirements, one of the things we wanted was to kind of talk about what they saw in our systems and what we do and what the next step is going to be. Because we're going to now to do all this, I know one thing, we're going to have to go do some change our current system a little bit. And then also, what do we need to do in the future with just us for getting sewer and water, just something we're going to have to do. And then when you figure in a whole utility system and a much larger organization, where we need to be. And then also we can talk, because here's one of the new board members of Water and Sewer, and we can talk about maybe some of the things that could possibly happen over there at some point too. So.
Okay. I'm going to hand you all out just a memo that we kind of put together. Just kind of summarizing some of the information that we think is pertinent to.
Thank you. Here, I'll take these. You got one for yourself.
I'll take this up there. So essentially, what we really kind of came in to help the city with, and kind of working with Rick and some of the. The folks working on putting together the budget, we kind of try to get a good understanding as far as what you got in terms of your existing departments and services that you provide, and also trying to anticipate what's coming down the pipe for you all in terms of the acquisition of the sewer and water, and you've got this new City Hall coming into play soon. So basically, we kind of assisted with that process, but as an outcome of that, this memorandum kind of summarizes some things that that we wanted to make you all aware of. So I'll wait for Rick to get
okay.
back before we go any farther. But, you know, essentially, you guys are moving quite a bit away from where you were, you know, a couple of years ago, and things are happening fast, and so the beauty of it is everything, you're kind of starting somewhat from scratch. That's a challenge, but it's also somewhat of a nice luxury, because you can set some things up the way you want them to and get them right the first time instead of having to you know, reinvent the wheel.
Thanks.
Here's one for Vicki. So, any questions in terms of before Rick heads back, and just general questions that you have or concerns in terms of where you're heading?
Go ahead.
So, you're mentioning some maybe inadequacies in the accounting process.
Mm-hmm.
So, would there be, when we have our forensic audit, would there be any punitive things against the city?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, and when you say forensic audit, you've got somebody, I take it you're hiring somebody to do some forensic work, or you're
My understanding is that that being that we're in our sixth year and making a certain amount, or bringing in a certain amount, or our budget is a certain amount, that would qualify for us for our first forensic audit.
It's actually just an annual audit.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah. A forensic audit would have to be having to do with if you think there was fraud going on.
Oh.
That's really what forensic, but fiscal, probably what you've had in the past for the most part is just a reviewed financial.
Right.
Is that
just
correct?
Saying,
and now you need an initial fiscal audit. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, obviously, I think you're the folks that you've been working with, Candy Frank, I think, has been working with you on doing the kind of the annual review. She's made some recommendations, and so we've considered those. But there's been some things that we've kind of that have come about mainly because of some of the where you're going in terms of setting up some new funds and the potential for acquiring the water and sewer. So. You know, with that, one of the things that's always a challenge is trying to get a good accounting system that doesn't cost you an arm and a leg, because you're trying to, you know, balance having a good system with not eating it so much up in some kind of an accounting system that, you know, eats up a tremendous percentage of your budget. And I think, you know, for the most part, you're using QuickBooks right now. It's okay for small businesses, for small entities. But the moment that you step into really more of a full-fledged government accounting reporting, which is where you're going with having some more than one fund, you're going to have your general fund, you're going to have a special revenue fund, and then you're going to have probably a reserve fund.
We have a housing fund.
You've got a housing fund.
Housing fund.
So the complexity of that is each one of those funds is separate and needs to have somewhat of a self-balancing set of accounts. The unfortunate part of QuickBooks is it's really set up for more of an enterprise accounting where there's only one fund. There may be multiple activities, but there's one fund. And there are ways that you can kind of stitch it together and make it work for a while, and that's, as we get into this memo in a little more detail, we're suggesting, you know, probably you can make it work for the interim, but, you know, when you bring water and sewer in-house and then it's going to add more funds, QuickBooks is really going to be limited. I mean, it's going to be more cumbersome than it's worth. And so, you know, ultimately, you're going to need to look at going to some software that actually is more geared towards municipalities and even maybe something that's a little bit more oriented towards cities. So, and part of that is in the interim. So let's talk briefly about the interim. let's make sure we get a good chart of accounts, which is basically a listing of all accounts of the city that it uses to account for revenues, expenditures, assets and liabilities, and so forth. Making sure that we have enough description and detail of those chart of accounts for departments. So we can probably get you there with QuickBooks. Again, it's not the greatest way to do it, but it probably is a short-term band-aid, if you will, until you might look at some software that's a little bit more geared towards what you need. So that's one of the things that we're recommending is let's make sure that we put together, work with Rick and with the rest of your administration, putting together a good chart of accounts so that we can track these categories to the extent that we need to. So you've got information that's meaningful to make management decisions and also that tracks your budget document as well.
So with the plan that we talked about, I don't know if you've talked to Sandy about it, but when I met with these guys last is, first next month, I think it was, we were going first of June-ish, after she's paid the payroll, and, right now, people are spoiled, because, as you notice, they get paid 3 days after they put a bill in here. I mean, that's not normal. Once a month is adequate, but every 2 weeks is certainly more than adequate. So, what we'll do is, let them take it up to Ben, to their shop, after she's done the payroll. Redo things, get it set up with the chart of accounts we're going to need and everything. Then come down, reload it on our system, and then sit down with Mary and go through the whole new chart of accounts. Sit side by side with her. Well, by then we'll have a stack of some bills and show her how they need to be entered and then, they may have to come down another time. But get us switched over with the new chart of accounts. It'll get us then going starting July 1. We're all set to roll moving forward with our new stuff. And then basically that can last for all of next year if we want, but at some point in 2011-12, before July 1 of next year, we need to months ahead of that, make a transition to a more municipal type city system. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of...
And who knows how much it's going to cost, but I would say, and I talked to Rick about it, it might be a $15,000 to $20,000 price tag. On the other hand, you may pay somebody almost that much just to get the accounting right, trying to make it work in QuickBooks, especially as you bring water and sewer in. So
we put money, $22,500, I think, $22,500 in our budget. Mm-hmm. And you told me that Condon had just done this. Mm-hmm. As an example, that's a size city, and they went to a full system.
Yeah, they had another system, but it was better than QuickBooks, but not much. So the system they're using is used by a lot of cities throughout the world.
Which is that?
I think it's Cassell.
Cassell.
Yeah. So, I'll probably know here. I think they're in the middle of doing their transition right now. I think they're going to go live with Cassell July 1 is where they're going. So we'll have a pretty good idea in hand before you guys decide, whether that's what I can tell you what the bumps in the road were for them and hopefully be some value to you. So as it is right now, because of some of the limitations of the chart of accounts and of QuickBooks, there's going to be some errors that happen, or misposting of things that happen, and that's not necessarily because of accounting staff as much as
the nature of the program
and the nature of what you got in terms of a chart.
So, like this example they use there on the city hall. Mary asked me when the check came in. Says, "Well, what do we do with it? Well, you look at the way the system I inherited and it's set up. It's like, no, there's no where do we put something like this, and where do we have rental income? And just none of these things existed. So I said, well, let's put it miscellaneous or something. And then when we do the system, we'll move it from there. And that's ultimately what's happened. But I'll take blame for telling her to put it there because there was no place else to put it. And it's just the system, But that's just an example of it.
Yeah. The other piece of QuickBooks that's a limitation as we turn to the second page, the kind of as we look at accounting software, bullet point one, QuickBooks does permit or allow you to have budget information, but it's not very it's not set up for governments. It really isn't. I mean, you can do it, but again, there's no self-balancing set of accounts. So if you put, you know, $10,000 in payroll expense, theoretically, that's a requirement of the city, and so theoretically, you should have a resource. QuickBooks doesn't. Will not
hear you. You're saying it should, if you put in an expense of 10 grand, it's going to lock up or VPatch it till you find revenue from somewhere it balances.
Yeah. Is that not in QuickBooks?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. But with a, with the right system in place, it should do that.
But that's called a double entry system.
Double entry, right.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And QuickBooks is double entry for just accounting, but not right. for budget.
Right.
So, you know, the other piece of it is, QuickBooks, it's real easy to manipulate transactions after the fact. It's great for small business people when they say, oops, I made a mistake, I just double click on it and reclassify it. You don't want to make it that easy for your accounting personnel, especially when you've got maybe one or two people doing a majority of the accounting. It's both protection for the accounting people as well as protection for your organization. You don't want to make it too easy for people to change stuff after the fact. You want a good, what we call, audit trail, so you can follow transactions through. So that's the other kind of limiter of it. And then, you know, the third piece is just when you bring water and sewer. QuickBooks does have the ability to invoice and track receivables, but it's really meant for small businesses who don't have a tremendous amount of customer base and they're doing, you know, a handful of transactions.
We use QuickBooks at Gaha Water, and you know, we got 22 customers.
Right.
And it works fine.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Yeah, and we're actually want to get a system that either integrates with what they have currently, or where we can, the new system, we basically can migrate theirs,
yes.
theirs onto a new system. And Donna had emailed me the other day, and she says, you know, because she knew that we were looking at these, and Donna said, hey, make sure, or at least when you go out for RFPs to talk to folks, that we keep in mind what kind of system they have now, find out, will it merge?
Right.
And or is a system we buy, and I said that's actually important, and so I told her I'd have her sit in on these interviews and we do it, because that's a key piece. Mm-hmm. We want that to all come in smoothly. We don't want to be mm-hmm.
Yeah, about how many water
600.
Yeah, that's a little mm-hmm. too much for a QuickBooks system.
Mm-hmm.
But and it is quite a bit to just want to have, you know, to have to enter all that information again would be a lot of work in terms of the database information there. So yeah.
But I mean, it won't work because under our current budget, how what Ken does, I've kind of said this before, but Ken comes in, man, you are not going to have anyone to really do that because I'm not doing it. Ken, I guess, maybe still doing it. But, you know, he takes, and about every 3 months he comes in and he takes all kinds of little things and
reports.
And he divides them and he puts them into these little Excel spreadsheets he's got. And I mean, it's a very but the problem with all this, you're re-entering things all the time, and every time you know, that's where you make mistakes because it's not all automatic. And so, you know, he's hand entering in, and then you're basically, I bet we touch every number three times. Well, that's asking for trouble.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You never balance.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Leads to errors, for sure. Okay. Any questions in terms of?
Well, just kind of, don't I recall that in the last year, the water and sewer over there just upgraded their new system,
yeah.
a new system?
Well, they're using QuickBooks for their bookkeeping.
Right. Oh, they are?
But as far as their billing...
Okay, it was a billing software.
They have a billing software.
Well...
Is it Casell?
They did. They had Casell. Donna told me they have an older version, and she said it was kind of complicated. And, you know, they kind of got...
Neptune?
They got rid of it. But I don't know what program. I can't remember what they're using. Now, I don't believe they're using QuickBooks for the billing.
I would be surprised.
No.
Well, they just spent a lot of money. I can't remember.
She gave me a name, but I think. And my guess is that these companies like Casell, they're
going to be able to migrate.
And another thing is you have to realize that, to be honest, while 600 is a lot, because when the Casell lady met with us, you know, they have a room full of people. You know, they can, compared to thousands of things. It 600 isn't a ton of addresses to enter. If you literally had to go in and put in everyone's address and the thing and how you could start over.
Yeah.
if you have to.
Now, I think you can probably do the migration from whatever billing software they have. The question is, what capabilities does that software have in terms of exporting data in a particular format so that then Cassell can import that data into their database? So depending on that, that's why, you know, in terms of a price tag, you know, we throw out 15 to 20 some thousand. Depends on how much time it takes for them to get that data migrated over. So.
Yeah, and the other thing, remember, if since now with the election, you know, we'll be able to, the sewer and water can help pay. If it's going to be a system that is going to take care of both, it may be a $25,000 system, but they pay 10 of it and we put some in for ours. So, you know, it's going to be a whole different world. We'll be able to, because it's for the benefit of, it's for all.
Yeah.
Well, another aspect to it, in cost-wise, is the fact that you might be able to migrate it over, but what's the end result? You may have to do an expensive cleanup just to, you know, rearrange it a little bit. Even though it's been imported, everything doesn't come where it's supposed to go.
No, but that's really what you load up. You know, that you put that on.
You know, they're building like that. Right. I mean, like their system, which I'm assuming you could, I mean, I have no idea how sophisticated, but you could switch it over. But they're stuffing envelopes, and I guess she said, well, people complain, but I haven't had anywhere I'm at. I don't get envelopes for water bills generally. I don't know. Ben sends out envelopes. I bet it's a card. Sewer and water, because it's cheaper. The address pops on it, an amount that you owe, and then you rip off half and you include it.
That's what Ben uses.
I've been over there numerous times, and they literally, you know, your $40,000-$50,000 your people are sitting in there, hand folding, putting a label on. That makes no sense 12 times a year.
Yeah.
So, you know, your postage is higher, and you just need to go to a card, you know, and so. You know, right, who knows what their system is, and but I'll bet it can do all of that. But that's all to be found.
Right.
But
okay.
Yep.
Any other questions on that? You know, the other piece is, you know, due to the size of your organization, you don't have real good segregation of duties. And what we mean by that is being able to separate kind of the record keeping functions from the custodian of the assets. And when you bring water and sewer aboard, it's going to be even more critical because there's going to be more transactions. More of those transactions are going to be in the form of cash or checks. They'll be, granted, they're small amounts, but much of the money that you're receiving now as a city comes directly from the county tax treasurer's office. It comes from Oregon Department of Transportation and so forth. That's a little bit easier to track and follow through, a little bit harder to manipulate in terms of monies coming in. On the other hand, water and sewer, it's an area that, in my experience of auditing for 20 plus years, it's an area where people, if they want to steal, they're gonna, that's an opportunity for them. So want to make sure that you kind of put together, as you're evaluating, you know, your budget for that water and sewer, evaluate who are the people you're going to have in place for that. And there certainly can be some crossover where you might have somebody who handles some of the utility functions, but they might have other functions within the city that are accounting where they can't have both those access of records as well as access to assets or funds. So that, you know, kind of the point is, you know, right now you're going to be limited in what you have. It's real important for you as a council, and I think you're already doing it, is be involved in the transactions on a regular basis. Make sure you're getting reports, that you're getting voucher lists, that you're being able to review. You know, part of the problem now is being able to compare that with a budget, and I don't know if that's happening right now.
Not. We say that again.
Well, in terms of when you get a list of expenditures, mm-hmm. or a list of vouchers, the list of vouchers in terms of expenditures that need to be sent out or paid or approved, knowing whether to approve that, you should have somebody at some level looking to see, do we have budget appropriations to before we...
That does not happen.
Does not happen.
No. Unless you do it.
I check it regularly.
Because, yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. And that's because you end up with this, it's not a system that allows you, we have our budget kind of on one half, and you've got the QuickBooks here, and it's not a merged type right. deal. So there's really no way. Now, we get both reports, we get the report, so I get the 6 month bar.
Yeah.
We went over that, we spent a session and went over, and you saw this one's at 52%, we should be at 50, and this is 35. The city of La Pine, traditionally, has spent way less than they took in, mm-hmm. because we were just getting going. But now as we start to spend more of what we take in, and I went mm-hmm. to unappropriate ending fund balances for that purpose, you know, if you put $1,000 for advertising, you know, you get up to $990 and you're at 6 months, you know you're going to have a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, and so we won't have that ability to just move stuff around quite so easy. So when you're out, like say we just bought a new laptop for the mayor, well, what you would do, you'd say, well, you know, that's going to have to wait until July because right now, you know, we don't have to worry about it so much. So, but yes, that is missing from what I'm used to. And that's where you get an integrated system like Cassell, you're going to have all that.
Right. And we can probably do a little bit of that
with
the QuickBooks as a kind of a crutch or a bridge. It won't be perfect, but hopefully it'll give you enough information. Somebody can look at it and say, gee whiz, what's going on in this budget category?
So where do we see ourselves picking that up? Is that through this point in time, so we start off in 1 July?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All of this stuff that we're crutching along to?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. In terms of putting together a good chart of accounts into QuickBooks and getting things kind of up and going in terms of recording expenses, and then hopefully being able to take some of the information from your budget worksheets and get that into QuickBooks as well. And that's a little bit cumbersome, but I think we can get there. So at least you've got something to look at in terms of being able to get a report at the end of a month or quarter and be able to look at a budget to actual, see if it makes sense or not.
I like that.
Because that's really, I mean, that's one of your controls as an organization is you can look at the vouchers every month and write off, you know, sign off on the vouchers or sign off on the checks, but you're looking at one isolated transaction. You don't really get to see things in the grand scheme of things, and being able to look at it in the grand scheme of things is another control to say, hey, how come we've spent this much money? Is there something that's miscoded, misposted? So that's going to be kind of another piece that will be important. I think short term, I think it's something you really ought to do. Long term, it'll be a lot easier with the Cassell program, but
so would we be able to approve the bills before they're paid, or generally we
yeah.
can approve the bills after?
And I would, you know, my recommendation is that, you know, you should get with when the bills need to be paid and checks need to be signed, behind that check or group of checks should be the documentation, so you can at least look at it.
Well, they do have that.
You
sign
have
that
check.
Okay. Yeah. I think, but it. I told them this anyway, and you can tell me maybe, because I don't know how another way. I think mostly, unless it's a major expense or something, but mostly the bills are, when you actually see the bill, you've already incurred the cost. I mean, you have to pay it. You can't say, well, I'm not going to go down and pay the lady on the corner for the printing you did. You can chew me out for getting the printing, but you're going to pay the bill. The bills, in fact, are paid. The expense has been incurred.
Exactly.
So you can't get around that. But I think then by having that other documentation of that printout, you can say, hey, you know, you're overspending that darn fund, Rick, you know, and do you realize you better cut that off? That is the piece we're missing. But the bills are paid after the fund.
And that'll come with the review of the bill information that we get, right?
Hopefully, once we get out of this temporary, whether or not the temporary, but he's trying to say the temporary might work that way,
right.
But we ultimately, I'm looking kind of bad. We've been this way for 5 years, we can go 6 more months the way we've been doing it. It's really looking ahead as to where we got to get.
Taking steps.
So I guess going back to the bills, so I guess once we establish a purchasing policy, mm-hmm. then that okaying the bills becomes moot, right? We were not going to have to do that anymore.
Yeah,
you'd still approve them. And one of the things that Rick mentioned, you know, depending on the expense, you can set controls at certain levels. So
right. Anything
under this dollar amount, anybody can go out and go purchase it. If after it gets above this amount, then it takes another level of approval, whatever that level is, whether it's department head or city manager head or so forth. And then after that, the next level might be council has to approve any expenditure beyond this. And so, you know, maybe it's $50,000. I don't know what it is, but if the city manager goes out and spends $50,000 without getting your approval beforehand, that would be not so good.
Right.
City manager is going to be in trouble, whoever that might
be. Do we have, what,
$5,000
now?
Yeah, but that's, again, those will have to change because sure, and water is going to do an order for things, you know, once we get them in here, you know, they're ordering valves and stuff. And so it's going to become more of a city where there'll be a number, it'll probably be higher. And the day-to-day stuff, what would happen is you take Scott. Scott maybe can purchase up to X amount. If he goes above it, he's got to get, say, my signature. And then if it goes above that, it comes, you know, there's, like you said, a whole tiered system.
Yeah.
Right now it is $5,000.
Okay. All right. So. Anyway, the point is it allows certain level of approach, you know, because you don't want to be looking at every $10 bill that you incur. You guys don't have time for that. And if you do have time for it, you want to get paid for it, for certain.
The other reality I think you need to, Mary and I kind of talked around it a little bit, and I talked it with Ken, realizing this is changing probably from a contract basis that we've been doing once you make this move at some point in this next year. So, in other words, when you go to a Casell system, And you literally have sent someone back for a week's worth of training. It really becomes a staff member.
It becomes
an employee.
Yeah.
And you're taking on sewer and water. Donna does that work now over there. So you really are going to be, you know, do what she does, but much more. Just if we didn't have sewer and water, then you take on sewer and water. So, you know, my thought has been, and I kind of talked to some of you, I think that we probably will need a city recorder / finance type person. Most city recorders do the finance in most small cities. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whether it's finance / city recorder / finance, we'll have a 3-person city hall staff is what we're going to need now that the election's over, you know, before the end of next year. And you'd have a city manager / public works director probably, and then you're going to have a finance / recorder, and then Patty's position. And that's your main city hall kind of function. And then, of course, you'll have your billing clerk that would be there. But I really see that. So we will have to switch from a contract type, you know, thing. It would become an employee because you're going to have them here all the time. I mean, they'll spend 20, I would say half time on finance and half time on other things and other projects and things, some of the stuff that we want to get into. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of, in a broad sense, what I see. And that's why in our budget, we put full-time position in what we had Sid doing. You know, we got that third position in there, and that's ultimately what I see. And one of the things I put staffing, but we took it off because here pretty soon, if we're going to move toward that a system, we had to have a person on board before we get a system. And so it could be, you know, we have it, since we have the position, it could be one of the first things we start moving towards is hiring that position. Mm-hmm. Get them here, let them help analyze the software system with us. They go back and get the training. They start learning it with just our current system, you know, all of our stuff. And they get to where they're good at it. They've had a few months at it. Then when we start integrating with sewer and water, they've already been here for 6 or 8 months.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then in January you get your new city manager. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I've been thinking in my head. And that maybe we can do it next month to spend some time. And also you guys can think about it, call it that month. It's kind of what I've thought.
Good timeline. The comment here, we recommend the city retain a professional experienced in evaluating and design internal controls. What's this time frame? Have we already... Did we talk about that, or...?
No, we haven't talked about that. I mean, that's, you know, that's probably something, you know, I think that's something maybe we work on is as you're looking for that next person. And then the other piece of that is, you know, if you're going to bootstrap this water and sewer system on, that's going to change your internal controls as well.
Of course.
So, you know, there's pieces that I think you look at now, and then you probably start anticipating, okay, what is our water and sewer public works department going to look like? Who's going to be some staff? And, you know, I think those are things that you start working on, you know, over the next 6 months.
Okay.
So, and that's kind of really what we're talking about in that last paragraph is, you know, there's some deficiencies in internal controls in most small organizations, and I'm guessing that there's probably some in the water sewer entities, and so it's going to be, you know, essential that you do these things now and over the next 6 months. And I like Rick's approach. Do it 6 months in advance. If we wait till April or May to try to throw that in, it's too much for you. I mean, you're going to be in the middle of working on your, you know, 12-13 budgets and you know.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's been bugging me at night. I've been thinking, you know, I won't be here then, but I just, this poor new person comes on and they're going to have a disaster on their hands.
Yeah.
You know, we have a meltdown because bringing this sewer and water in then with everything is just going to be, you know, so I think we need to get that finance person on board.
Yep.
So it's a smooth thing. And, yeah, because you're right. See, we're going to have to take their budget and integrate it in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we need to start, I would say February, we should start on your budget. January, literally, start on the budget. So when you get this new person, that'll be one of their first things to start working on is the budget. But the last thing they need to do is be figuring out getting a new finance person the same day. You know, we need to have them on board.
So, can we go over, like, the timeline on how this is all going to play out? So we're going to crunch along until how, until when?
I could drop it. I haven't thought this out, so this is talking out loud with you, but I don't have an eraser. But anyway, I would say if we did September, say if it was a goal maybe to get our finance person here, September, October, and then we pick our software system, you know.
Yeah, I would say
November.
You could probably do that as late as, you know, maybe early January is about as late as you'd want to go with that. No later than early January.
Except we're going to have to get the software system here. I think otherwise, you're out there in January, February, trying to send someone back east to get trained on the system.
Yeah.
I just think
I agree.
We need to learn it here.
For them.
You know, you have to, because I agree, as I told the group today, we met with the new board members, look, we're going from 1.5 employees to 7 mm-hmm. or 8. We're going from, like you say, 2 or 3 big checks to a bunch of $20 and $25, $50 transactions, 600 of them a month. I was down there today at the sewer and water office, and the phone rang more there probably in the 20 minutes I was there than ours does in a day. So I think people need to understand this is a big, big change, and I think it's not worth fudging over a couple, 3 months. We need another person in here anyway. So,
okay.
Right, so we're going to be closed tomorrow, the next 2 days, because we have no one. You know, I mean, so whatever, whether it's September, but then spend October, November, getting us our software system, so that then, you know, December, January, so this is the...
September, October.
This would be the finance employee, I guess, you know. Get them in here, and then I would say October to November the software,
okay.
And then they start using it, you know, and we get into it. Then January 1, you got your new administrator comes on. You know, this person will have been here for a few months.
And your budget.
And then they start working on the budget. And then March, April, they start figuring, getting it, how they're going to integrate it in with sewer and water and all that different stuff, you know. We're going to want to run some tests and all kinds of stuff with their systems and get them in here. Because if we're going to have to send them back to get them merged,
right.
All of that. So, you know, that's kind of what I've been thinking about.
So we're going to... Before that, though, we're gonna do some stuff with our own software.
We have to. That's not too big of a deal, though, is it?
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, by June, say June 30th, you're going to have a good quick, you know, a Band-Aid, if you will, for QuickBooks.
Okay.
For, basically accounting and budget work.
Yeah, and Mary will be doing all that.
Okay.
And then at some point, Mary.
Is the council going to have
she's going to go do parks and everything else.
Will the council be involved in any of this, with any kind of expenditure of funds or approving money to make this happen or hiring a professional or?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
This crunching along I'm talking about. This crunching, getting ourselves through to set up by the end of June.
Oh, that's just, we're just going to pay them by the hour to come in and set up some charter accounts.
Okay, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's just, but obviously we get into software and all that. I mean, we'll have interviews and we'll have to approve any of those kind of expenditures and things. And then while he, you know, you're here and he's with the sewer board, and they would, you know, like Wayne, if you wanted to come up, maybe you could talk, because one of the things we had on our agenda was talk about sewer and water a little, and like Chris is here, they talked about they'd like to have an audit down there, and you saying here it's something that we would want. We want to know what we're getting, they want to know what they're giving, and what they're inheriting.
Right.
So maybe you could talk a little about some of the things you could see.
Yeah.
They would hire you for that, and it would be their process.
And probably, and let's just kind of talk a little bit about levels of service that traditionally accountants provide. Currently, you've had a reviewed financial statement. You're now going to an audit. An audit is much more in scope than a review. But when we look at financial statement audits, the objective is basically to make sure that the numbers are fairly stated in all material respects. So when an auditor does that, they design procedures in such a way that they can just look at certain accounts and certain transactions to basically verify that. They plan their audit to look for fraud and errors and so forth, but it's not the main objective. Their main objective is, are the financial statements fairly stated or are they not? And so one of the things that I've been thinking about and I talked to Rick about is, in terms of going in and looking at the water and sewer, I don't believe the best way that you can spend money is getting an audit, a financial statement audit. Rather, what we would urge that you look at doing is what we call an agreed upon procedures engagement. Sometimes people call it audit procedures because many of the things that we do are audit type of procedures. But what we do is we really focus on areas of concern that you as an organization has. And so it's time better spent. We focus on those areas that are more critical, and we don't sit there and look at every financial statement line item, because although it may be somewhat critical, what's really critical is, you know, you want to know what you're inheriting. Are there good records or they're not? If not, what are the areas that have concern? Now, there may be more stuff that we have to do as we delve into that, but really, we focus, if you will, procedures. And so you get a little bit more bang for your buck, because we don't spend time, you know, assessing the risk of the entity as a whole and a lot of other procedures that go into a financial statement audit. We really focus on what are the things that could go wrong and spend our time really looking at those particular transactions and account balances.
Is that you're talking about that on behalf of the city?
No.
Or are you talking about
on behalf of the...
No, this would be on their...
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But is that saying it's a forensic type audit?
It's more of a forensic type of audit. It's not a forensic audit because that's a little bit different. But what usually happens on these is, you know, either there's recommendations that we come to that say, hey, you need to bolster up or work on your internal controls, or we find something that's wrong, mm-hmm. whether it be an error or fraud, and then we talk to the client saying, what do you want to do next? We probably ought to dig into that more to find out exactly what the magnitude of that particular item is. So it is kind of more like a forensic audit. But it, you know, really forensic audit is the goal there, objective there is to look for fraud and to measure how much the level of the fraud has occurred. So that might be
I'm sorry, you're describing the forensic audit?
Forensic audit, yeah. Okay. So what we're suggesting is not a forensic audit, but it's probably more like forensic audit procedures than it would be standard financial statement audit procedures.
So you would recommend that when we know that the primary person responsible for that has been indicted, 12 indictments for, for some financial thing.
Stealing money.
Misappropriation.
Misappropriation.
Right. Yeah. So that would be appropriate?
Yeah, at that point it probably is, becomes a forensic engagement. So, and to me, there's probably two legs to this thing. There's, if you believe that fraud's occurred, you would want to hire somebody to go in and do actual forensic audit procedures to determine how much. Because based on that, we'll depend, you know, dictate how and when and if the city's going to, or excuse me, the water sewer system is going to try to recover from whoever's committed it. And also, your authorities, police authorities, are going to want that information too, so they know what level they're going to prosecute at. But the other piece is really getting a good understanding is, you know, we have accounts here with said balances and said transactions. Are they right? Are they wrong? Or we don't know.
And the financial help.
Right. So those are the other pieces that we'd go in and look at. You know, we might look at, you know, your receivables. Excuse me. Your aged receivables.
This is unopened bottle of water.
Thank you. We might look at your the receivables and say, hey, are these things right or not? Is there anything unusual going on here? Are they processing them correctly? Are they, have they been misposted to certain customer accounts? Does that amount reconcile with what's in the general ledger? Those are the types of things that we'd be looking at doing. We look at, you know, just purely, you know, what kind of expenditures are being paid out. Mm-hmm. And then we report to you and say, hey, we noted that these transactions were paid to said vendor. They don't seem to be appropriate expenditures, or they could be inappropriate expenditures.
What's the time frame on the looking? How far would you look?
Well, I would say just from the kind of the financial health piece, we might look at the last 6-12 months, whatever your last fiscal year is, or up until the point where it gets turned over. In terms of forensic auditing, you know, that it's kind of really, we may open Pandora's box.
What I'm thinking of is something in line with this. If you're looking at something like a 5-year span, you're seeing what the history kind of is going along as far as where has the company gone? Mm-hmm. You know, is it growing? Is expenditures exponentially going down the road? That type of thing. 12 months only just gives you a small, you know, you're looking through the window and you're just seeing into the room.
Yeah. Well, in terms of looking at detail accounts, mm-hmm. we'd probably look at the last 12 months, but we would do trend analysis, absolutely. Well, I mean, we've done that in the past, yeah, because it can tell a story. And from that trend analysis, then we may come back to you and say, hey, things looked okay up until this point, but then in 2007, things really started changing. We don't know why. Mm-hmm. We might make some inquiries to try to find that out, or we may suggest, hey, we think you need to spend, you know, some more money to figure this out.
Mm. And I think the important thing here also is to prepare this entity to merge with the city, so that not only does the city know what the finances are, mm-hmm. but also get the systems to be able to merge together. And I think the earlier we do that, the better opportunity of a smoother transition when it comes to the point of the marriage, so to speak.
What's the time if the districts were to, they take over in July, and if they were to put out an RFP and, you know, get someone like yourself on board, you need 30, 60, 90 days to kind of do the types of things you think you'd do there to dig in, or because that'd be what the months would be then, let's say September, October, November. That's right. You're probably busy with your regular audits.
Mm-hmm. ultimately, the sooner the better for us in terms of timing.
Because your audits haven't started yet.
Yeah. I
mean, when do your audits start, your regular?
We've got a few going on in the summer, but, you know, we've got some people that probably will have some flat time in that, you know, July 20th to August 31st to even September 30th is actually not a bad time for us to get in there. And do some stuff. And in terms of somewhat of a deliverable, because I think that's part of the question too.
Yeah.
If we started, let's say, you know, August 1, when would we be done? Well, that's a little hard to say because we don't know what we're going to find. But, you know, maybe in terms of our initial take on things, you know, it's probably about a 60-day turnaround.
Sure.
And it might be sooner than that, too. I mean, if there's some real obvious stuff, we're just going to come to you and say, hey, you know, we just hit, you know, the tip of the iceberg, and here are some of the things that we found. So that you know, whatever action you need to take, you can take.
Mm-hmm. That works.
So, in finding something, just as you've described, right out of the gate,
mm-hmm.
You would then come back and say, we need to move this into a different type of an audit.
If we found fraud was actually had been committed, as soon as we discovered that, we'd tell you immediately. And it wouldn't be like, oh, well, we found, you know, $5,000, we're going to keep looking. No, as soon as we find it, at that point, the fraud's occurred. The question is now, how much is it? That might take longer to measure, but, you know, really, the act has been, we think we've got enough evidence to support it. Then it's really kind of expanding the scope of that to figure out, you know, how much is it.
In your mind, this is a proved business on their part as a new group taking over after 10 and 20 years of the same people running the show. And in our case, we're assuming it. You know, so it's not that, you know, I certainly don't have anything that says that anything has been done that shouldn't have, but it, in your mind, is it a prudent, when you're talking about a multi-million dollar thing, that both sides should want this?
Yeah, I would think so. You know, when a council changes over from, you know, one council to the next, it's not like you go out and you have
right.
special, but anytime you have, when there's a major change in both the administration and maybe the financial officers of the organization, with a small entity like this, you know, there's a risk. You want to know what you're inheriting.
Absolutely.
So.
Well,
that help you out?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. So, we'll, so I guess, you know, you guys will, you and I and Sandy will be working on to right here after in a couple weeks, so you guys can start, she's already probably been working on the chart of accounts maybe, but so we can figure that out and get that going, and Mary will not do bills there for a little bit, and we can get that back down here and get it going, and then these guys will be taking over on July 1, and so that part will go, and then we got to talk about the whole broader staffing question, what we want to do, and then we'll be moving into kind of the whole software systems and some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to look at what our next month's going to look like? June for meetings?
June?
Hmm?
I did look at that, yeah. You mean in this calendar?
Well, there's this calendar, and
you can, Chris, we don't need
you. You don't need me anymore. I'm going to
head on to bed.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks. Do you want these? I've got some extra copies. Do you want these?
Sure. Give them to Patty there. And we'll,
thank you.
I appreciate your work you guys did with us. And, you know, this is, as I, the city, we've been kind of put a lot of effort and energy into lots of areas, and this was an area that we just hadn't done yet. It's probably one of the more important ones, so we're, I'm glad you guys are supportive in moving, doing this, because I think when you think about it, this year our budget is $1.4 million, and
you're going to end up with a $2 or $3 million budget mm-hmm. after next year. And as I was telling this group today, it takes money to make money. We have to spend some money. We have jet, but we were doing other things. We spent $100,000 on planning and comp plans and things. It's now time to spend some money on the financial side of things, getting things ready, because we owe that to our taxpayers and ratepayers.
Well, you just as you started, what is it, about 5 years ago, you kind of were starting everything, new organization. Everything was probably going at somewhat of a neck-breaking pace just because it was all new.
Yeah.
When you go from 1.5 employees to 6 or 7 employees, and you go from, $500,000 budget or $1 million budget to $3 or $4 million budget, you are a completely different organization. Mm-hmm. And I commend you for, being proactive. It's real important to do that. It may be some hard work for the next 9, 12 months, or maybe 15 months, but in the end, you'll reap the rewards of that. So.
I think it's important to note that we're a new council, just started. There's a couple that have been around for a while,
mm-hmm.
but I think it's important to note that this whole idea or this whole focus has been a result of our interim city manager,
mm-hmm.
and this is just it's developing. It's obvious that it's developing from how he outlined the new budget ought to look and how we ought to do things because of what we face. So I'm pleased where we are.
Yeah. No. You're the ship steered in the right direction.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next month, of course, we have our regular meeting up here.
On the 8th?
Yeah, and that's our budget hearing, which, of course, has 5 minutes. On the 8th, we're done with planning meetings, right? Because all that stuff's been, we approved all that, so we don't have any special meetings with planning.
Yeah, we're not special, but they're still going to meet on the third Wednesday of every month.
Who? We're done with planning for a while. Mm-hmm. We're talking about council, things they have. And just to let you know, actually, the 22nd, I won't be here. So I was hoping we would either do the 15th or the 29th for our work session. I got a river trip starting Thursday morning, and the people are all staying at my house the night before 15, 16, and I need to be there.
Okay, what's our choice, the three of us sitting here on those 2 days?
The 15th is Planning Commission.
Well, we can find a place to meet.
Oh, another.
And the Planning Commission, Deborah, Planning Commission I don't know, it depends on what they have to work on.
Well, what I'm personally, I'm thinking that possibly, like we have done in the past, we could move it up an hour.
That's true.
Because
this is our workshop, but the 15th, of course, is only 1 week after. We could do it, this is getting toward the 4th. Maybe people.
That's a concern I have. A lot of us are busy getting ready for the Frontier Days and Rodeo and all that stuff, and the 29th is tight.
Yep.
It starts getting tight.
We can go ahead and do the 15th. A lot of cities do meet in July less. They just do because people want to go barbecue and
vacation. Yeah. Is there something that we need to?
No, you guys don't get other things. I think the 15th we could spend it on the staffing if you wanted.
Yeah.
That we really need some quality time on that where you don't have five other people.
I think we should because that time finds and I was concerned when you're talking about that a little bit that. Well, that's been probably okay, but we've got a move coming up, too. That's a big thing, but
move's not
it seems like that should move along.
Well, that's the 1st of September.
The physical move, we'll get some helpers in here.
Yeah,
right. Patty and I just will walk over there.
The 15th is.
Plan the 15th.
However, I'd like to make a comment around the idea that I'd like to see the Planning Commission move their meeting before. No, we were ready. They were still at the table at 6 o'clock last time, and that's not going to work.
I think
4 o'clock would be better.
I don't.
What do you have to work on?
I don't know.
See, that's one thing I'm
concerned. And I think, isn't John going to be gone?
Yeah.
John Thomas?
Yeah. You could cancel your June meeting. Because a lot of planning commissions, you have to, and Deborah and I have talked a lot about that, you don't meet just to meet. I mean, normally, other cities, you have applications you're working on. Mm-hmm. We have no applications to work on. They approved the zoning codes. We're waiting for the state on the comp plan. The lady from the sign company, we're going to do a little community deal on, what date did we pick? I think the 8th. For on signs, what if you guys could come down and sit in on that, some of you, on to see if any community people come in on the sign ordinance. This, you know, that lady's going to...
Is that June?
No, excuse me, I'm talking June 8th.
June 8th?
Yeah, that's right today. It's not a council date.
Oh, okay.
Planning related. But what does the Planning Commission have to sit here and talk about? The zoning ordinance is the ink is just dry. There's nothing for them to change 2 weeks after we approved it. We have no pending applications that they have to deal with.
Right, no,
the only thing is that we do have two new planning commissioners, and we need to bring them up to speed on some things. But if I am running the meeting, it probably will only last an hour.
I'm glad you spoke to it in that fashion.
Of course, they were going over some of the policies that day, weren't they a little bit?
Yes, we actually had, you know, that was a pretty full agenda that last time. And, you know, we did try to wrap it up.
Did you guys meet at 4:30?
No, we met.
So can you meet at 4:30?
Probably.
Do you have any people on there that are working?
Well, that's when I'll send an email out tonight and check and make sure that will be okay with everyone.
I just think we need to have it understood that we need a lot more time before the city council.
It can be done in a quarter till.
Right. I mean, drop dead.
Yeah.
Or sooner. And since John's not going to be here, I could see it being sooner.
Well, 15 minutes should be enough time for a short change.
No, that
kind of a role change. So anyway, if I got it right, we're going to meet our work session on the 15th. Skip the 5th. And then we would meet on July 13th, would be our regular July meeting. And then we can see from there.
Clarifying, it would be at 6 o'clock on the
15th? We meet at 6.
Okay, that's what I mean.
So you need to meet to where?
Before that.
4:30 or 5, just where you get done. Okay. And Deborah probably maybe doesn't need to come down.
Yeah, I don't know. No, she has any issues or not.
Is that what you wanted for a schedule? I think I kind of think off the top of my head if there's anything
else. Does that work for you, Dan?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The other two aren't here, so they don't get to vote.
Yeah, there you go.
As soon as you lose.
That's it.
Yeah.
Don't show up, you get appointed to something.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's.
Are there any other matters?
I just was going to show you. I sent you saw the pictures maybe, but I did two code things today, and just to give you an idea to pass down, but this is a property inside the city limits about 4 blocks from here. And I gave you that, and I have more pictures. This pile is not this pile. There's two houses on the property besides this that are vacant.
This was talked to me by over the weekend when we were on a cleanup by Sergeant Pete Penske.
Okay, darling.
He's the sergeant down here for the Sheriff's Department. I'm sorry, I misspoke there. But he was talking to the fact that we needed a solid waste
ordinance. So, what I've done with that, I went out, you know, these are all, you know, you get a little nervous down here sometimes.
Yeah.
But, you know, I go out and I don't. But I do know where I park my truck and what direction I have it. I mean, I'm trying to. I got it all figured out. The fireman stuff, I need to keep you on top of that. But you always get your escape route, your secondary route. And I mean, I plotted it when I drove in and to see if people came out and dogs and did the whole thing. Then I went and got my escape route already. But that property is a total disgrace. That isn't a nuisance abatement. That's pure filth and garbage. So I
called county help.
I went. The county isn't going to help us any of this stuff. The I went to the neighbor who complained, talked to him, he told me his part, got enough info out of him. I then hunted out who owns the property, and then found out, and Donna and Ashley helped me a lot because I saw the sewer thingy there. And so they knew all about that property. And so they shared with me the name, the address of the finance company that they've been dealing with. So that was very nice of them. And so, and then Scott came in. So the three of us spent some time going over this property. What they got there is a spigot, and is not a direct into a house. And so what these people were doing is they took a garden hose and then they branched it. And what you really had is a campground squatters deal. So you had garden hoses going to three or four properties, and what happened was the water bill got big, and then no one was paying. Sewer, there's one hookup, but I saw two or three out there, so what they think is people have run pipes around and gotten it in. There's one power meter on a post. So anyway, I called the company in Springfield. And I said, look, I talked to the president of the company. They are the finance company. They're going to take it back, probably. And they've got 20 of these. There's other properties in the Pine that I don't know how many of these guys are involved with. This is owned by, but he's not making payments, and it's going to go back to the man who runs one of the other cleaner businesses in town, clear at the north end, that has a police car parked. This is the owner of the property. So the finance company, I sent you a copy of what I had told him. I told this finance company that they had a guy cleaning up some of their properties down here, and I said, look, we'll work with you, but this thing's going to get clean. And I sent him an email with those all the pictures. I sent him 10 pictures, and I said, well, the city of Lapine will not tolerate this, and that we will initiate criminal, civil, and other actions, and we will go clean it up, and we will put a lien on that property. And I'm willing to work with you, and I will be out there next week when I'm here on Wednesday, and part of that better be gone. Because all you need is a backhoe, a tractor you can rent it, and a trailer, and start loading that crap up. And I had a guy call me that they'd hired. He called me, and he's going to start Monday.
Good.
Oh, good.
So we will see. Nothing's been moved today, so you don't, you know, this will be a process. They had a lady that had a tent on there, and I said, you know, move her out. I said, why are you worried about a lady in a tent? She wouldn't last 5 minutes on my property. I mean, he said, well, you know, sure. And I'm like, well, she's not, you have a lease agreement with her.
Are there other people out there too?
No one is on the property. Those things are uninhabitable, basically. Now, what we call uninhabitable, inhabitable is...
Yeah.
But they look uninhabitable to me. The neighbor thinks that maybe one person was still staying there. I stuck my head in these houses. The doors were open on them. I'm going to be aggressive on that. To me, I think your value system in this town, that is not even close to acceptable. That's not the guy with 10 bags of garbage in his front yard. Yeah. This is, I told the guy next door, I apologized. I said, how come you put up with this for this long? He said, I didn't know who to call. And he went to the county, he called the state, they've been through all of it. The county isn't going to enforce an ordinance in the city. So just give up on that.
Right.
But this kind of stuff, we don't have to put up with.
And we're not playing. If we had our own solid waste abatement ordinance, mm-hmm. then we'd have teeth.
Yeah, more so.
Okay.
But see, I'm not giving them that. I don't care. I'm not flashing an ordinance. This is unacceptable to the people of this city.
No,
and that's why I told the owner from Springfield. This city won't tolerate it one second. And I'm not flashing rules in front of him. Because this is beyond that.
Yeah.
And we will go in and clean it up. And when we will flop a lien on that property. And so he said they want to be good neighbors and they will come take care of it. He had not seen the property or been on the property.
Wow. Yeah.
So, then the other one, this one, which makes this look, I mean, this is clean compared to it, and I only got a couple here, but this is out in Cable, and this should not be going on in a residential neighborhood, and the there, what you've got is that metal shop. They're parting out cars inside there, and that trailer, the guy tells me, he says, well, I run electricity from the shop. I live in there. The lady that owns the property lives in a house on the other side of the property, and I went over by there. She's elderly. He's the groundskeeper, this guy. And then they sell wood, and there's about 5 camp trailers on the property. He says that he does not go to the bathroom in that trailer because it's not hooked to sewer, but he did have a 50-gallon barrel that he could use, and he goes inside the shop to go to the bathroom. So we had this whole discussion out there today over all this. That one's more complicated because it's not as blatant. Yeah. It's not a home occupation. That would not get a home occupation once we get our rules in place, because home occupation means it's incidental to living there. That's not incidental to living there. He's storing tires, and they're running a metal shop. This stuff should not be going on in residential neighborhoods. I feel sorry for neighbors.
Yeah.
This is devaluing. And I went around out back, and the poor people, the houses behind them, I don't know how people are putting up with this.
Well, they've been doing it for so long, they're just not being able to get anything
this
done.
This one, we may have to wait for our codes. I'm going to call the elderly lady and hunt her down. I got her name, and her name was, I can't remember it. But I'm going to hunt her down. I don't know. This guy says he's moving. But anyway, that was today. I spent a couple hours on that. But I think it's important for us to deal with these.
Oh, yeah.
I do, too. I do, too.
You know.
Did you stick your head in this one?
That one he lives in, right?
No. Yeah. No, it's the one in front of him. That one, him and his buddy, him and his buddy came out, and the dog, you know, that's why I do my slow thing, and I give him plenty of chance for people to come out of the woodwork, is what I do. You know, you don't just pull up, park, and jump out. I get in, because normally then people want to come see who's on the property. And so before I got out of that vehicle, I've done a lot. If he hadn't come out yet, I would have drove around back. I mean, I would have done all kinds of moving around there to where I can leave. And they came out, so I got out immediately. He came out, and I shake their hand always. I give them my card, and he gave his name, and then his buddy's there, and I kind of, now, what's your role here? And, oh, I'm just visiting. I have nothing to do with this place, you know, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And I looked at the house where the old lady lives, and, you know, oh, boy, I got pictures of her front porch and everything, and it's, you know, like that. So this stuff is sad.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot more of it out there.
Well, the man in Eugene told me that, and the cleanup guy said, he said, well, we've been working on cleaning up some of this man's properties for a while. He said, we just haven't got to that one. He said, we did the bad ones first.
Oh.
And I said, do we have more of these in this town that are owned by Mr.
Mendenbach. I know.
He has like 20 of these.
Yeah.
And so I got to go out and see him sometime because I'm getting complaints. So, you know, at some point we're going to have to rein that guy in. He's cluttering more out there.
Isn't he part of that that building on the south north end of town?
He's the wood carver.
Yeah, okay.
With the magical herbs.
Yeah.
No.
He's
screwed
around.
He
does
the same
type
of thing down at Brown.
That'll be an ongoing thing, but it gives us. I'm glad we got some money in the budget for some code, and we'll get some things, and we'll.
So what about the flea market?
The flea market, I haven't gotten there.
Oh, okay.
That was on my. I was going to go hit that today, but that one back there got me so worked up. I decided to leave the flea market alone.
Oh, yeah.
I could only do 2 of these
a week,
you know, because I am going to go down to the flea market. And I got to go down and find out who runs it. And there I'm going to, you know, they're leaving their stuff outside. I'm going to say, look, this stuff has to go in. First of all, when you're closed, stuff goes in.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get to keep it out here. You have to clear the stuff off your tables. And I'm going to talk to them about signs, find out who owns the property. I mean, that's the key. All this always goes back to the landowner.
Yeah.
If they leased it to one person and that person subleasing, because I did go around back and there's a camp trailer, that's illegal in the commercial zone. That we'll be able to deal with because it's in camp trailers, whether putting stuff on the ground or using an outhouse. But you know the gray water's going on the ground because they're not moving. This thing's sitting there. They're not hooking up and moving that. So you know the gray water's going on the ground. You can't have people living in commercial zones on camp trailers. Now, we've got them in the woodlot, three of them.
Yeah.
And I went over there already.
Yeah.
And I do not go in that yard. I came to the fence and they came out, talked to me.
By Gordon's down there?
Yeah, they got pit bulls in there.
I think that they're populating too. They're getting a little more people over there.
In that wood yard?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I haven't been down there in a while. So, you know, these, we just kind of, you have to take them. Patty gets the complaints, and, you know, I come back and I said, oh, boy, this was a dilly, you know. this one was right here. You can see it from the, you could, if you go over to the Veterans Hall, mm-hmm. I mean, the
American
Legion, the thing, look through the forest. So if you go down Finley View, if you look in there, you'll see this garbage out in the trees. And you have to come in from the other road, and you come clear down Telegraph.
That's this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you come clear down to almost the end of Telegraph, and then they got like three roads. Oh. That's a fairly big property.
I thought you said it's four blocks from here.
No. Well, back, it's not very far. It's just diagonal right car. Well, right, it's right.
It's not far.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the wood yard up by Gordy's.
Well, we were a minute ago, but not this property is just back here.
Okay, I thought you were saying from the American Legion.
No.
Oh, I was thinking the American Legion Hall up north by Gordy's.
No, I'm talking the
VFW.
Can I get out of here?
Yeah, you can see it from the, because when I was standing, I thought I was actually going to go over and get your husband if he was there. I was actually thought about getting Jim to come over with me and walk around it with me.
He's got a powder sheet.
But that was my thought.
That was good.
I would have had Jim with me to go over there.
There's a couple of boss, too, that were coming here.
That might what?
Fear looking at.
Well.
You might have a
call. That's the only way I'm here looking at him.
Okay.
Well, so, yeah, at some point, he's overpaid for doing that kind of work.
Well, yeah, I mean, right now we don't have any choices.
Yeah.
But if I can smooth some of them over,
yeah.
Where maybe some of the other pieces are missing,
yeah.
Again, you try to get compliance. And I think we're going to get compliance on this one.
Yeah.
I think the other one's going to be a little tougher.
Mm-hmm.
Just because if, in fact, it's an older lady that has no ability to do anything.
Sometimes this is mental illness. And
yeah. And they get these
like
people
that.
In, these squatters that come in and help them, and maybe they pay them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many of those are in that subdivision, but you do find a few of those in Cagle. Because it was in the country.
Yeah.
But you sure shouldn't have it back here.
Yeah.
Is there any agency that checks up on elderly people like that?
Oh, I don't know.
Around here?
She may be not. You know, he may be over saying state of her elderliness.
Yeah.
You know, she may be just fine.
You didn't see her?
No, I did not go to her porch.
Oh, okay.
I thought I'd
done all that. I thought you had a very valuable property skin.
No. This is the lady owns it herself.
Okay.
This one. And this. Thank you very much.
Thank
Any
you.
Council comments?
Nope.
I'd like to tell about one. We did the cleanup at Wiki Up Junction last Saturday, and we hauled a number of loads off, and there was plenty left there. I got a dumpster dropped there, a drop box put out there, and I run into Pete at the police station, or the sheriff's office over here, and he said, well, can I go out there and do something? Because, you know, everybody knows Pete. I drove by there today, and it was all done.
Whoa.
Oh, gee.
And you know how much was out there.
Lots.
Even the stuff on the road as you turn into Wiki Up Junction, I couldn't believe it.
Ken, are you going to go down and put up the split rail fence with a couple nails?
No. The county has promised, Tom Blues has promised to
do that.
To deal with that. And
oh, that's beautiful now.
There was a lot of stuff left.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, so they're going to pull that out of there tomorrow. So. But we still need to sweep the streets.
So I'm going to ask Gordy. He had offered to loan us his sweeper, so and a driver. So I'm going to ask him.
You know, that's one thing. You mentioned street sweeper. Have we ever swept our streets? Have you ever? Because you know we. You know, that's one of the things for next year in our budget. You know, if you once during the summer, we could contract somebody to run all the paved streets. Most cities have their own, yeah. But obviously we can't afford it and don't need it. But, you know, it's nothing we have to do, but probably wouldn't cost too much. But where you go down and you kind of kick the rocks off. And
well, in line with that is one of the things we wanted to do when we had this cleanup of downtown was to sweep everything into the street. And when I talked to the county road department, Tom Luce, he said that they didn't, one thing is on 97, they can't get on 97.
Right.
And I'd have to go see Tim, the new guy that replaced Sweet, and talk to him about getting it done, but he didn't know that was ever going to happen. So I think it's a thing we need to think about. We're going to have a cleanup in the spring. We sweep all of them, and there's plenty. You look at the streets on Huntington, sweep that stuff out in the street, and then go on and sweep it up. There's two types of sweepers. The county has a sweeper that will move it off of the road.
That's dust in the air.
Well, and it just moves it. The state uses a picker, you know, a sweeper that picks it up, and that's what we need to do. So I think that's an excellent suggestion.
That's something we can look
at. As part of after the snow season.
Yeah, a lot of grit on the road.
First of all, the only place that there's ever any rocks on the road is where the county puts them down. So there's not a lot.
There probably isn't.
There just really isn't. It's never been a problem.
Yeah.
There's a lot right out here on 97. You look at those sidewalks, you're going down through there.
Yeah, 97.
But 97 gets swept.
Does ODOT come in and do it?
Yeah, our sidewalks don't get swept because the snow gets thrown up on our sidewalks. And up comes the gravel.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, as far as cleaning the sidewalks, I think that's.
I mean, if they're gravel, we ought to be able to push it back out in the street. Anyway. Anything else?
Good.
Motion to adjourn?
I make that motion. We adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor?
We didn't have a discussion on water and sewer districts.
Well, we didn't, because too late, too many people gone, and we just...
Okay.
I have a question for you before you get to the